Okay, this is the afternoon lesson of Thursday, the 15th of May. And we're looking at justice. For those of you listening to the recording, there's a copy of the resource we're using on the school website, English literature page, and on the Facebook group. Okay, so we've just read the introduction there. So that finishes with, your job is to use the evidence in the play to decide for yourselves what Shakespeare might be saying about justice, destiny, and the role of God. As I said yesterday, it's absolutely fine for you to decide that Shakespeare gives us no clear answers on that. It's absolutely fine to say, actually what Shakespeare's doing in this play is suggesting that the traditional orthodox view might necessarily be right, but neither is he giving us any definite answers about what is right. He's asking questions, and he's not necessarily giving answers. You don't need to come up with a definite, I think Shakespeare's saying, kind of statement about justice or anything else. So this is what the critics say. We'll read this through. Some nice little one-liners here that you can use. Some of them we've already looked at today. In 1681, an Irish playwright named Nahum Tate, we talked about him yesterday, replaced Shakespeare's ending with one in which Lear wards off the would-be killers, Cordelia marries Edgar, and all live happily ever after. Nahum Tate rewrote it in line with restoration notions of decorum. Shakespeare's version was not restored in performance until 1838. Apparently, until then, Shakespeare's Lear was too much to take. And that fits with the kind of critical views of Johnson and others that we looked at over the last couple of days. Nahum Tate, a name worth remembering. That restoration notion of decorum, simply the idea that there are certain things that you should and certain things that you shouldn't put on a stage. It might be true to say life isn't always just, but you shouldn't put it on a stage. That's not really the dumb thing. Right. So Tate and many other critics with him believe that King Lear seems to lack a comfortable moral overview, a position from which the events of the play can be seen to uphold some overarching moral position or postulate a moral direction in the world. Many have argued that Shakespeare, as well as Gloucester, believe that, as flies to wanton boys, are we to the gods, they kill us for their sport. They believe that Shakespeare's view of the world in King Lear was essentially pessimistic. Most die, cruelty remains unchecked, and all are ravaged by evil. Thomas Roche states that the play's ending is as bleak and unrewarding as man can reach outside the gates of hell. Samuel Johnson, himself one of Britain's most famous literary figures, claimed the play is contrary to the natural ideas of justice. A quote we looked at yesterday. The Roche quote is quite a nice one to learn. That it's not the whole thing, but it's, where are we? Bleak and unrewarding. The ending is bleak and unrewarding. You can add on his hyperbolic finish to that if you want to. Reach outside the gates of hell. Bleak and unrewarding, a nice adjective to use as a critical quote. Others, however, have argued that Shakespeare's view of the world was not essentially pessimistic, that Shakespeare agreed in the end with Edgar's solemn declaration that the gods are just. A.C. Bradley, whilst acknowledging the cruelty and monstrous evil of the play, also believes that Shakespeare's portrayal of goodness is as vivid as his images of evil. He sees the play as the story of Lear's education and redemption. The cruel and tragic events of the play, Bradley argues, spring as a result of the flaws of men, that the destruction of the good through the evil of others is one of the tragic facts of life, a fact that even God cannot overturn. While some critics have claimed an overarching moral or religious framework, Wilson Knight sees renunciation of the world as the moral lesson to be drawn. Others claim that Shakespeare deliberately undermines any consistent overarching belief system. Jan Cott argued that King Lear makes a tragic mockery of all eschatologies, of the heaven promised on earth and the heaven promised after death, of cosmogony and of the rational view of history, of the gods and good nature, of man made in image and likeness. In King Lear, both the medieval and Renaissance orders of established values disintegrate. All that remains at the end of this gigantic pantomime is the earth, empty and bleeding. Finally, perhaps, we have to agree with critics like Pick, who can only acknowledge the subtlety and greatness of the play that constantly refuses to be contained or explained. This is Shakespeare's great strength, and it springs from his ability to present the viewpoint of each character as independently justifiable, an inherently dramatic talent which resists final closure and definite interpretation. That's a lovely quote, that final one.
What's his name?
Pick. Yeah, I was obviously feeling I don't know. Like, he didn't really deserve a first name when I wrote this, but you can just call him Pick, because I did. But it's a lovely quote. And inherently, sorry, it resists final closure and definitive interpretation. So what I've tried to do there is to give you an outline, put together some critical quotes, the kind of basic approaches that people take. And we've looked at this, we've talked about it time and time again. But anything that's not in italics, anything that's not a quote is my writing. Anything that's in italics or in quotation marks is a quote. And then underneath that, there is a list of quotations, by no means exhaustive. And I'm putting together for you a much longer list of quotations. But it's a useful list of quotations for justice, the gods, faith, destiny, those sorts of themes. So the characters in King Lear express a variety of views and beliefs regarding the role of the gods and the type of world they inhabit. Your job is to consider what they say, what it tells us about their beliefs, and whether Shakespeare shows their beliefs to be well-founded or foolish. Here are the beginnings of some of the key quotations. So there's that quotation that I already used twice. As flies to wanton boys are we to the gods, they kill us for their sport. So that's given right after he's been blinded. He says earlier on in the play that the gods are just. Just before he's blinded, he says, I will see winged vengeance, I will take such children, I'll see, the gods will step in, the gods will do right. But after his blinding, he declares that the gods treat us like boys treat flies, they kill us for their sport. Okay. We won't go through all of those, but it's got after them, as well. It's got before them who says it, and afterwards where it's from the play. So it's act, scene, and line number in brackets after them. I was obviously feeling in a particularly traditional mood when I did this, because I've gone for Roman numerals for all the references as well. There we are. Okay, so what we'll do is think about what we would do as an essay for justice. How would we structure an essay on justice, and what would we say and how would we say it? You can use these notes and use those quotes. I tell you what, before we do that, do you want to quickly read through those quotes and ask me any questions about them? What does it mean when he says, who's whereabouts in the play? Because some of them are, you know, quite a lot of them you know, but not all of them. So have a quick read through and just check there's nothing you want to ask me about those quotes. Yeah.
Does he mean a restoration?
Yes. It's that ancient Greek idea, and it's right at the end of the play, he says that the wheel has turned full circle. Everything's back where it should be, everything's back in its rightful place. Yeah. Any more questions?
What does when Ken says the gods to their dear shaft are you made? Tell us all the
justice. It's just after Lear's banished Cordelia, and it's a kind of a prayer. This is a play of unanswered prayers largely, and he basically prays that the gods look after Cordelia. What's the last bit of the quote? Take the...
Maid.
Sorry, a bit before that.
The gods that dear shall
yeah, yeah. So it's that the prayer that the gods would look after Cordelia and take it to their dear shelter. It's there in a worksheet or a bit about justice, because the gods... whilst they might seem to do that in the short term, she does get taken by Ken, by France to safety at the end of the play, she's quite clearly not being protected by the gods or taken to their deer shelter. Unless you really work a Christian reading into the play and suggest that by death the gods have taken her to shelter in kind of the afterlife. But I think you have to work hard at the play to take that reading. The fact that Cordelia dies seems to me nothing of a celebration of her journey into the afterlife, other than, but rather a tragic kind of vision of a life cut short.
If you were talking about a Christian reading, would that give you a three?
Yeah, absolutely. Anything that shows that you understand that there are different ways you can read the play. That's why the critics are so useful, because they have to do that, talk about the Christian reading. You know, a Christian reading of the play would suggest that this play does uphold the Christian value system, belief system. So that there is a God in control, or the gods in this case, but a God in control, that men's sin, and by men I mean humankind, men's sin causes them to fall away from that, and when men sin, then chaos ensues, but God is graceful, and he will step in, and he will restore order. Although there will be a price to pay for sin. From my perspective, and from my perspective, you have to work really hard to read that into the play. You can do it. It's an intellectual exercise. You can kind of talk your way around that. But I don't think you sit there and in the play and watch it and come away with that sense of, oh, it's okay, God's in control and everything's all right now. That's not the kind of... That's not how I leave the play feeling anymore. Yeah, anything else about those quotes? Good. Okay, so you're sitting there, you open the exam paper, you do the poetry bit. Just making that sound like it's just something you warm yourself up with, do the poetry bit. And I taught the lyrical ballads last year, I loved it, but there's a lot to do. And then you turn over, you look at Leah, and there's a question about justice, and you do a little dance around the exam room, and then you sit down and you do it. So what do we say? What are the three things we're going to say about justice in King Lear? Actually, take a step back. What are we saying generally about justice? What's that overview of justice in King Lear? You'd put it into a sentence. Not achieved.
It doesn't feel just. Justice is different things to different characters.
Okay. Different things to different characters. Any other thoughts? All those I like. Good. So I think we need to be careful not to be too definite about this, because I don't think the play is too definite about it. But you could say reading and watching King Lear, it's difficult to see a clear sense of justice achieved at the end of the play. That would be fine. That's your overview done. You can move on to your essay. Or you could say ideas of justice are very ambiguous in King Lear. And whilst for some characters justice seems to be served, for others their plight seems a long way away from our natural ideas of justice. And you can even quote Johnson there. Ideas of natural justice, he says, isn't it? It's in that one we just looked at, and it's in what we looked at yesterday. So you've got your overview there. And as I've said lots of times, that overview needs to be something specific about the theme. You don't want an overview that says justice is a really important theme in King Lear. Because of course it is. There's nothing, you're not going to get marks for that. Or all of the characters deal with justice in King Lear. Yes, they do, but tell me something about that justice. So say something about it. Say something qualitative, something that has some depth to it about the thing.
Could you say that not all of those who deserve to have justice manage to achieve it?
Brilliant. Yes. That's fine. Anything that suggests that justice is complex, that it's difficult to pin down, it's ambiguous, that it doesn't seem to be
or is it very difficult to see how justice is served in every case at the end of the play? And now we need to think of our three kind of main ideas. Do you know why I'm doing these boxes at the moment? Because I never get them right. Now, just as a bit of advice here, if you know what your overview is going to be, then it's worth thinking about that to start with. But sometimes, particularly under exam pressure, you're given a theme and you think, well, overview, what am I going to say about this? I don't know. And you start to panic. Don't do that. Just stop. Work out what your three ideas are and then you can kind of work back from there to an overview. That's sometimes an easier way of doing it. As long as by the time you sit down and you're ready to actually start writing your essay, you know what it is you're going to say. That's fine. So what are we going to say about justice? We've got three bits of our essay, three blocks. What are we going to say?
If you look at the characters who seem to achieve justice.
Yeah. Characters for whom justice is served. And of course the thing with justice is it works both for good and for the evil, doesn't it? So for justice for the evil is that they get their just deserves. And we definitely see that. And justice for the good is that they get rewarded for their goodness. So we can look at those characters who seem to achieve justice or for whom justice is served, for whom justice is delivered. Whether for good or ill. Yeah?
Whom is not?
Now, when we talked about essay plans the other day, in the lesson after school on Tuesday, I think, wasn't it? I said, whilst the three-part essay structure is normally, or often, the right way to go, you can do a two-part structure. So we could do justice achieved, justice not achieved. I have to say that seems to be a pretty good structure for this essay. That would work. What you would have to do if you're going to go for that two-part approach to this theme is to remember that you need then in one of these to put a couple of links to critics and a couple of links to context. Otherwise you end up with an essay where you only have one link or two in total links to context and two to critics. Because we're kind of going one for each section, aren't we? So just remember that. But that would work. Any other thoughts about how we could do it? Go on. Right, absolutely. So this is the kind of sense of justice, an individual sense of justice in contrast with what we feel. Yeah.
Just pick three characters and focus on justice in their life.
That would absolutely work as well. There's absolutely no rights and wrongs here. There are structures that work better than others, but all of these would work. Three characters. Go on.
So you'd like pick three characters and then look at how each one deals
with
justice.
The danger of that is that they end up becoming character studies rather than an essay about justice. So you need to make very sure that everything you said linked to justice and their how much justice is achieved. And also that as you do it, you're linking those together a bit. Because you don't want three character studies, you want it about justice, but it would certainly work if you did that.
You could do characters for whom justice is achieved because of their villainy. You could look at characters for whom justice is achieved because of their goodness. And then you could look at characters who seem to, or who justice evades, who don't get their justice. That would be another way, which is a similar structure to this, but it's in three parts rather than two parts. It really doesn't matter as long as you know what your structure is, and that gives you a way of exploring in a coherent way what you want to say.
So what we're going to do, we'll use the two-part structure for today's purposes. But there's absolutely, I'm not saying that that's necessarily the best one, but it's certainly one that will allow us to explore some ideas here. Okay, so let's look at those characters for whom justice is achieved. Who do we pick out? Sorry, Goneril and Regan. I'm going to make some notes here and then we'll kind of put it into a bit more of a plan. Who else? Who else gets justice?
Poor Tom.
Poor Tom. Edgar?
Yeah.
Who else? Edmund?
Yeah.
Eventually?
He's an interesting one.
Cornwall? Regan's husband. How does he die? Stabbed by the servant, just after he's taken Gloucester's eyes out. Is that justice?
Yeah.
Feel a sense of justice there, yeah?
Could you bring in a gun?
Yeah, as context.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll do some of that now. Okay, let's flip around the other side. So who doesn't get justice?
Cordelia.
Cordelia 1 L or 2. I did it with 2 yesterday. It's spelled both ways in different texts. I'll do it with 1.
Yeah.
Stick with 1. Of course you can, yeah.
Leah.
Did
you say the fool?
Okay, Leah
and the fool.
And this is where your planning is so important. Because if you don't do this, now hopefully a theme comes up that you've already thought about at home and you've done your revision plans and you've thought about what you're going to say. But even still, plan it, because you're absolutely right. And we could do this for a number of characters. And what we begin to think as we go is actually this is a good way to structure an essay, but actually it's a bit of a false distinction, isn't it? Just there isn't just these are the characters who get justice and these are the characters who aren't. What about Leah? I mean, Leah cursed his daughter and asked the gods to convey sterility into a womb, and he banished Kent and Cordelia. Doesn't he get justice? Doesn't he deserve what he gets at the end? Well, you could argue that. So it's not that simple, is it? But that's the whole thing. So and that's fine, and this still works as that structure. But you need to have thought of that before you set out on your essay. You need to have thought of that.
Where would you put Kent?
Really good question. Where do you put Kent? Justice achieved or not achieved? It all depends on how you read the ending, really, doesn't it? Well, Kent has worked the whole play to see his king restored to his position, to save him from madness. At the end of the play, he sees him reconciled to Cordelia. He sees him given back the kingdom, albeit for a very short period of time. The king recognises him and thanks him for what he's done. So in a sense, he gets justice. He gets what he has worked the play for. And yet, at the end of the play, he decides he's going to go and join Lear in death. And he says, is this the promised end? We'll look at that quote. But is this the promised end, he says. In other words, is this it? Is this what the gods want? This kind of massacre that I see in front of me? So I don't think he feels justice at the end. That'd be fair. But you could argue on an intellectual level, at least, that he gets his justice, he gets what he's worked for. So, we could put him here, and we could put him here. We'll talk about how we do that in a minute. Anything, anyone else? Anyone else would want to put up there? Okay, good. So, let's have a think about the first section. We want a fairly detailed explanation. We're only doing two parts of this, so we're going to want a bit of detail in there. So let's have a look. Gonald and Regan, let's deal with them first. Why did they get justice? Or maybe not why did they get justice. In what way do they get justice? Why is it justice for them at the end?
Because the way they treat their father.
Because the way they treat their father?
They conspire against him and it backfires.
Good. They conspire against him and it backfires. Okay. So, the first point. How much detail am I going to write this in? The first point. So we've got Gonwell and Regan. They conspire. I'm not going to try and write this up. I'm going to run out of room. You get it in your notes. And anybody listening to the recording, copy someone's notes. So, they conspire against their father.
I just have to answer this, sorry. And the recording stopped.